I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran. And this is Radio versus the Martians. It's a miracle.
It really is.
A miracle of audio editing.
I don't know how it works, but I'm glad that it does.
It's also, to me, it's incredible that it's something that is a freeware program. So it's a free program, and it's not like we do this show and make six-figure salaries from doing it.
We don't make one-figure salaries. Yes,
but it is pretty cool, though, that we don't have to pay Adobe, you know, like $500 a month, $500 a year or something to subscribe to their suite when we have a program that does exactly what we need. That's like the meat and potatoes of our tool set.
Well, this is the beauty of the public domain period, which is that when I need to know how to do something with Audacity, Audacity has a huge community that is way bigger than it would be if it were behind a paywall to be able to use it.
Right.
And if I want to know how to do something, I can look it up on YouTube or Reddit or countless other places where people will show me how to do it. And I have all of these different options and ideas. Like, I'm like, oh man, there's this weird kind of tinny, empty sound to the recording we got for some reason. How do I enrich that a little bit? Like if we have a guest who's coming in over the phone, that's often the case. And there are ways to do it that you compress them in different ways. There's a thing to give it some extra bass, and then you take two different recordings and it's like, there's all these cool ideas that people have thought of, and it's available for everyone to experiment with because it's free.
Yeah. This is obviously a conversation. If we had Sam Mulvey on, we would be able to expand upon it a lot. But I'm just, my sense is that even if you do pay for like the commercial solution, I can't tell you how many times that I've had a problem, as you often do. You got to figure something out, and you go to the site of a company that you paid money to get this thing, and then you go through their support system, which is usually not great, and don't find an answer.
And it's automated, and it's not helpful.
And then you go and you search the internet and you find forums and you find places where people who are trying to do the same thing as you, and you usually can figure out an answer. So it makes you wonder, what do they provide by you giving Adobe like $250 a year to be able to have the name?
Audacity.
Audition.
Audition?
Audition is theirs, and Audacity is the freeware version of it. Mm-hmm. So what do you get for the privilege of paying them $250 a year? And mind you, you got to re-up now. You can't just buy the program once and use it forever.
You get ripped off.
Yes.
That's what you get. But I mean, that's kind of it too. But also, when you go looking for help, when you're talking to somebody who doesn't work for the company and didn't make the thing you make, you also get a much more honest, unvarnished idea of what the limitations of a piece of software is. You're not talking to someone who's going to talk it up and act like it's the end-all, be-all, or there's nothing you need to do, where somebody who doesn't work for it, one, you're going to find a bunch of people and you can find a kind of consensus, but also they're like, hey, here's a third-party little add-on that you can put on there that'll fix this problem that otherwise exists.
To say nothing of the fact that if it's a project that is open source, so everyone can look at the code and understand how it works, just the idea that there's a multitude of people who like, this is my hobby, I'm interested in doing this, I want to make a filter because I record X and I want to make a filter. You can do that, and then they can make that available. Those aren't behind a paywall. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay an extra $5 to download those. By and large, most people are like, I do it because I love it, and if someone else has the same need that I have for this, you know, to add on to this tool to make it more robust, to make it more useful, we should do it. The fact that every interaction has to be monetized and has to be this idea of like, well, we're running a business here, right?
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the problem. But again, it feels like we're dancing around talking about like Twitter or something.
Right.
Because we see like the wave of microtransactions and the attempt to monetize everything, turning it into something that nobody wants to use anymore. Because I don't know how much, like, to talk about Twitter, how much people want to use it now. The advantage that it has, even though it makes all of us miserable, but it clearly fires some kind of dopamine in our brain to
sure
use
does.
It.
Yeah.
It is addictive. It's kind of like I smoke. And one of the best things, I don't know if you folks have noticed, but we're not on Twitter anymore. And it feels like I can suddenly run up hills and breathe and not have a coughing fit. Because, like, on an emotional level, that's what sort of Twitter did to me. It was just such a toxic hellscape. And I think, in a weird sort of way, Elon Musk did us a favor by, it's kind of like if my worst enemy bought the rights to cigarettes and I was addicted to cigarettes. And now not only am I giving myself lung cancer, but I'm enriching one of the worst people in the world.
Right.
And
right.
that just becomes the last little nudge to give me the push to get off of there.
I know. I mean, I didn't know this until probably a week into the actual kerfuffle that, you know, it was like Saudi money that allowed him to, because he can't liquidate $54 billion worth of his own money, obviously.
Yeah. Well, like, he doesn't want to, like, because his net worth is based on that stock.
Right, right.
It's tied up in his own company, and he just sold another $4 billion of it. By the way, we hate Elon Musk. If you want to know more about how much we hate Elon Musk, you should join us on Discord.
Right, right. I just think that whenever there is the caveat or the qualification that this happened with Saudi money, you're like, well, then you know that it's not going to be a good thing for humanity.
No, certainly not if you're like an American Saudi journalist who likes having your body all together.
I mean, we don't want to be telling tales out of school here, right? We are in America, and so the rest of the world could rightly view help coming from the American government as being like, oh, well, it comes with expectations.
It usually
right?
comes in the form of bombs, yes. I believe.
but for sure, if I'm running an internet-based platform or something, if Saudi money is involved with it, I think their idea is that, hey, we want to be able to lock this down and have control over our own people. So let's just keep putting our money into all of these things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just dirty. I mean, American money is almost as ugly, dirty. If not more so. We have greater a degree to be able to shove our claws into the rest of the world.
That's true.
But I think I'm reminded of a passage from A Feast for Crows, the fourth mm-hmm. Game of Thrones book, where it's a chapter where I think it's from the point of view of Sansa. She's in the Eyrie, and Littlefinger is getting news from King's Landing because Cersei has been in charge for a short period of time.
Right.
And I think he says something like, I always knew that Cersei would beggar the kingdom and destroy herself, but I never quite thought it would happen so quickly. And that's what watching this is I think that a guy like Elon Musk can buy himself the reputation of being a futurist and a genius and a technological maverick and somebody who is a business guru. And you can only go so far with that, because if you control what is largely a pretty small company, and even if you're a micromanaging asshole, which he is, and God knows his companies are just riddled with all sorts of scandals, from like systemic racism to sex scandals and him being a fucking creep and exposing himself allegedly to a woman on a plane and then offering to buy her a horse, this stuff with him killing monkeys dying in agony because they had stuff glued to their brains for his Neuralink. His program, I mean, him accusing a...
this is starting to sound like a Bond villain here.
He is. He is kind of a... Oh, he's not even a good Bond villain. I mean, like the Bond villain who... Even though Elon Musk is a great name for a Bond villain, though I would say Elizabeth Holmes Theranos is a better Bond company that you would run, the evil Theranos Corporation.
Because it's so close to Thanatos.
It is. But Elon Musk has a very... He's kind of like a Bond villain that you defeat in the pre-credit sequence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a mini-boss.
He is. I mean, that's the thing, is that I look at his stewardship of Twitter, him completely taking over and turning it into his own thing, and I just go, wow, if I was his archenemy and I wanted to destroy him and discredit him as like an incompetent boob, I could never do to him anything close to matching what he did to himself within the course of 2 weeks.
It doesn't. So some of these things don't track, and I feel like it could be like the George W. Bush thing. So there's so many things I end up having because of this. My political awakening happened during post 9/11 and during the George W. Bush administration, and it is clear if you were to like watch that guy ad lib and talk not in an interview or not with the, you know, not with a teleprompter, that like he's just he wasn't the most clever person in the world, but politicians don't need to be incredibly smart. They just need to have incredibly smart people around them to help sort of push them in the directions that make them have decisions that
like Ronald Reagan, they're actors. Yeah,
like legitimate. Yeah. And I can only imagine that, yes, Elon Musk is clearly has some skill involved with software engineering, which is why he became successful early on at dad's money, I guess.
By the way, his dad owned an emerald mine in apartheid South Africa.
Right, of course.
Is there any more evil coding you can give except for maybe like munitions or something?
Yes. But then I really think that like once you have something as huge as SpaceX or whatever, you just have you just find and pay incredibly smart people a lot of money, and they cover the fact that you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, and then you are because this is the capitalist system where the guy who owns everything gets to make all the money and make all of the decisions, not necessarily the people who are the smartest at something. They don't get to decide the direction something goes. He wants to create something very much like Cohagen's colony on Mars for himself, where he gets to own everything and fuck them, shut off their air. He made fun of me on the internet.
Too bad Ronnie Cox is too old to play Elon Musk in the Elon Musk story.
I think Rainn Wilson would be good to play Elon Musk in something, but I would say, you know, everyone, they act like he's Tony Stark. He's not Tony Stark. He's not even that guy that Sam Rockwell played, the rival guy in Iron Man 2.
Right.
Where nothing ever worked. It's like he has enough money to buy himself the reputation as like a genius.
Right.
But there's a point at which, and I think Twitter is that point, where you can't control something of a certain size. He can't do the thing that he does with his other companies, which is that you can threaten to take your money away and the project or whatever it is that you're working on in conjunction with the government or some other company will collapse without your money. So you get your way by just being a bully. That's not being a business master. That's just having enough capital that by withdrawing it, nobody gets to do anything.
Right.
It isn't that your ideas are better. It isn't that you're a 4D chess master. You just have money. And yeah. I think he bought himself that reputation that it's enough that these sort of like tech bros who smoke, you know, vaping fluid that tastes like Bitcoin, those dudes on the internet just fucking love him. And they'll defend him no matter what. They're like those like bald dudes from Fury Road who are like, notice me, Immortan Joe. It's like, dude, he's never going to fuck you. What are you doing on the internet?
Here's the part that I think is a big disconnect. I mean, we all unfortunately live in our own weird little worlds because we have our blinders and our filters or whatever. But most of us do not understand what it would be like to have so much wealth and power that if you just, whatever whim it was, you could, most of these things could be make happen for you. Most of us live under the constraints of the fact that we just don't have a lot of power in the world and can't change a lot of things and can't get a lot of what we want. To be able to be a billionaire is what is it that our friend of the show, Patrick Johnson, said is that to be a billionaire is to be someone who says, oh, there's a rule that says I can't do this. Well, I can do this.
Yeah.
Right. That's their whole mode of life. And most of us can't put ourselves into the place of someone because we've never experienced that before. So a way of conceptualizing why he must be so important and so rich and so powerful must be that he's a genius. Right.
Yeah.
It can't be just that you acclimate yourself to a life of being able to get basically whatever you want, and past a certain number of billions of dollars, you can get what you want.
Yeah, but not only that, you don't even have to know how to overcome obstacles. You don't have to be clever. You just have to be able to hire clever people. You just throw money at something, and that's the solution. Even if it's like, I have to get around a law or a UN regulation that says I can't do landmines or sell weapons to this, like, you know, horrible rogue nation that wants to, like, you know, it's all of that. If I want to build a factory somewhere and I don't want to treat people well, there's definitely a fascist country that's allied to the United States that has death squads that'll kill any potential union leaders that might want to pop up at my factory. And I'm fine with that. And you just throw money at it. There's a legal problem. I can afford a crack legal team. Oh, there's a technical problem. I can buy the best people, because most people don't have the seed money. This is, again, the problem. Capitalism rewards people that already have money, and it rewards people that don't feel bad doing the sort of easy thing that it takes to get money.
Right.
I can pollute a lake and I don't feel bad. I can underpay people and I don't feel bad. I can use factories in a country that uses child and slave labor and I don't feel bad. That's when you get into stuff like, you know, Jeff Bezos not, you know, really feeling bad that there are people in his warehouses and delivering his products that have to pee into bottles because they're afraid to take bathroom breaks because they got to keep those productivity numbers up.
Yeah.
And it's all about not feeling bad about making those decisions. So capitalism is ultimately something that's going to reward people that don't feel bad, that don't have the sort of moral, you know, firewall that stops you from crossing certain lines. That if you are a person that has any kind of a heart, there's going to be an upper limit to which you're going to hit and go, I'm not going to feel bad.
Yeah, there's going to be an upper limit to where you're like, really? That would have to happen to get what I want? That's fucked. I'm not going to do that.
And then somebody else will buy you out because there's a bunch of guys that don't feel bad in that way.
This has just got me thinking, because I just finished watching Medieval, the Ben Foster movie, which is, you put it down pretty low on your list of movies of new movies you saw this year. And I'd agree. But it had a super fascinating, there's sort of an interesting meta level idea behind the hero story, especially like the medieval hero story. And we've all seen variations of this before because we've been suffused with derivative works of like King Arthur and all this crap. But the point of that movie is essentially like, well, you know, the philandering of like these petty nobles are exploiting a political crisis, and the only man that can solve the problem is like the brave knight who just happens to be a fucking badass, a one man army, right? After watching it, I was just sort of thinking there was so many millennia of completely unchallenged assumptions about why like an autocracy was like the sole and legitimate means of controlling power in a state that. Only recently, let's just say only in human history, very recently, have most of the world been like, nah.
Well, they say yeah, but they say we can't be brazen. Right. That there's a certain point where, I mean, this is
it's not what I'm saying is billionaires aren't that different. They're functionally stateless kings and queens.
They are, and they don't have any kind of democratic leash holding them back, or and like
they don't have to worry about people sacking their castle and burning it down.
Like the mayor of Seattle and I wanted to end homelessness, think about all the loops that I have to jump through. How many of the people I have to get on my side? I'd probably have to get a huge chunk of the public to come out hard for me, because those oligarchs are like the veto on almost anything good that you want to do,
right?
Because they're like, what? You want to take away my ability to monetize all of this surplus property that I own, that I can't just buy houses that would otherwise be affordable for a regular person, and instead turn them into a bunch of Airbnbs or rent them out? I mean, they don't want to change that, and they kind of have their way, and it's amazing their ability to shut down certain things. So one, if I'm the mayor, I have to do all of that stuff to get stuff done. I have to overcome, God, the lawyers, they don't even have to come at me themselves. Again, they can just hire somebody to come after me and probably do a recall campaign against me. But if I am the billionaire, I don't have to ask anyone's permission to end homelessness. I just buy stuff.
Right.
I buy stuff until I own enough stuff that I can just give it away for free and nobody can stop me, because I don't have to get a vote of the city council.
And the people, the businesses from whom you're buying will be happy that they're getting money.
They'll take the money and they'll shut up.
Yeah.
And if they try to fight me, I'll just throw more money at it.
Right.
And it's just a point at which either money or the threat of a lawsuit and knowing that I can just hang back and continue to hang out with Richard Branson on his yacht and a bunch of people that I'm paying are doing all this stuff for me. It's like a 24-hour just barrage of whatever to get my way eventually, that I will wear them down, that eventually I'll just get what I want anyways.
Yeah, it is that weird, we've lionized, we've mythologized and romanticized the idea that like our robber barons are somehow different than, say, like, you know, than say like a rogue noble from the medieval era who gets wealth and power by killing people and taking over or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're functionally not that different. It's just that like society has advanced and now we give people the legal means to be able to buy into these things.
And
right?
We can do our killing on the other side of the world where people don't have to look at it.
Right.
And we just go, oh, well, that's just stuff that happens in brown countries and kind of helps build up our just residual racism. I mean, that was the thing that you just get from these people. And one economist also were just fucking ghouls. Like one of the things that really struck me at the beginning of like the Russian invasion of Ukraine in the news, and this happened a lot, and nobody talked about this, and it was fucking disturbing, was that over and over again, people are like, I just can't believe this is happening into a country like this, that this doesn't supposed to happen in a country that's so European.
Right,
and it's like,
right.
Like, what the fuck? It's like, well, this is something that's supposed to happen in one of those brown countries. They're the ones that have the sepia tone filter and have dirt streets and look like Mos Eisley. Those people all blow themselves up. That's just how that is, rather than that's something that's been imposed on them. I mean, look at pictures of like Afghanistan in the 1970s and see the fucking difference. That was not something because those people can't be civilized. That was something that was done to them by so-called civilized people with advanced weaponry who wanted to own their natural resources. And it happens all over the world. So people like Elon Musk, when there's a fucking coup in Bolivia, goes, we coup who we want. Because, of course, he's a guy who has a company that has batteries. And what do they mine in Bolivia? They mine lithium.
Right.
So, I mean, it's the same bullshit. And again, it's just that he's not doing it to peasants here. He's doing it to people that we as Americans are sort of predisposed to not give a shit about.
Yeah.
So he is the medieval warlord.
He
has to maintain a certain attitude. But again, you can also buy up all the media here. Who owns the Washington Post? Jeff Bezos.
Well, you'll find no shortage of rubes who are just like, he's an awesome guy. He's a role model. That said, you find there is no shortage of people that live in the UK and affiliated colonies who were very sad that the queen died. And let me tell you, there were a lot of people that were very happy that the queen died too. So what does that say?
Well, look up some videos of like an Irish soccer match was happening at the same time, people singing Lizzie in the Box, you know? It's like, no, you know, if you want to feel bad, you know, Queen Elizabeth, oh, well, she was so great, she oversaw the dissolution of the empire. No, she didn't. That wasn't her who did it. It was her despite that. She would go on tours all over Africa, basically going, hey guys, wouldn't it be great if I still came around and you still paid taxes to me because my ancestors killed a bunch of you and despoiled your country, but don't ask any questions about all the various jewels on my crown and where they came from. You know, let's not talk about that. It's like, I'm civilized. It just happens to be that all of my wealth was built by people who exploited and murdered you. Aren't I great?
It is so hilarious that it has now become like a phenomenon in America, like the crown show.
Mm-hmm.
It's become like a phenomenon in America to be like, well, it's this fairy tale that happened in real life that we can like fawn over and really learn about the history and stuff. And you'd be like, wasn't America supposed to be the ones that are like, kings are bullshit?
Yeah, but we fall into that all the time because we have our own version. And there are people like Elon Musk.
Right, right.
Is that I think on some level, the thing that separates that is the idea that there's this tiny possibility, this tiny little one in a billion possibility that you might become that oligarch.
Of course.
And that you could be that person. I mean, unless there's some sort of King Ralph disaster, I'm not going to become King of England. And anyone with anyone who becomes King of England, the first thing you got to do is give all the shit back. You'd piss everyone else off, and maybe I'd get killed by those guys in the fluffy hats, you know, in some kind of Romanesque coup. But I mean, a good person can't be that. I mean, there was a whole thing lately, just a couple months ago, where the prince's son, so Prince William's kid, who's in line like three down, basically saying, my dad's going to be king and you better be careful or something like that. And I'm like, oh, my brain goes into a lot of Praetorian Guard sort of things where this is what these people become. And you feel a lot less bad about what fucking happened to the Romanovs. I mean, you get raised in that environment, you are going to be a bad person. And I think it's like there was a thing, too, with Elon Musk. His ex, Grimes, had seen the Dune movie, one that she took credit for the Dune movie. It was like a bunch of...
Sure, sure.
I don't know, these people live in a fantasy world, but the aristocratic mindset was such, and they occasionally, because they only hang around people that are either their employees or other rich people, nobody tells them, wow, you sound like an asshole when you say shit like that. That's fucking awful. She said she watched Dune and she was in tears thinking, oh my God, this is going to happen to my son someday. And I'm like, you're going to be a fucking despot on another planet? I mean, they tell you who they are. They tell you who they are all the time.
I suppose there's a, like I said, maybe I'm constantly trying to find ways to try to relate the idea of the experience of being someone who's so disconnected from reality to like something in my own lives. And I kind of feel like there has to be, it's like the equivalent of, and I know you and I do not hang around, have male friends that are like this, but you've probably been in the same room with them where the topic, the sort of the conversation and sort of the interplay and the banter becomes just misogynistic.
Yeah.
And people are cheering each other on and it becomes just like a improv session about who's able to like do more funny or whatever. I feel like you could probably say the same thing about people of wealth and power over a certain level is, they are allowed such malevolence that mm-hmm. it's probably like gamesmanship for them to just be like, look at how disconnected from reality and from people's suffering I can be.
Yeah.
I, that's what I imagine when they are like three scotches deep and they're talking to each other. They're probably like measuring dicks to which of them is more of an asshole to the people who work for them.
Oh, and they're serving drinks. The people are right there. Yes. They're right there polishing their feet. And it's just like, I'm just like, oh God, slit his throat. I mean, there's just this part of you where, I don't know. You haven't seen this, I don't believe, but there is a new movie that just came out. We probably are going to have to absolutely do an episode about it. It made me so fucking happy, called Triangle of Sadness.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it. So yes, and it is about the people that don't want to be said no to, right?
The 1% of the 1%, and yeah. That how they think they're your friends, that we're all just friends, but I can coerce you into doing things for me. Oh, see, it's, we just have fun. See, I'm going to make you do this thing. Isn't it a fun game? It's like when the dad in Parasite has to play along and dress up for the kid's birthday party.
Right.
And it's like, oh, we're all just friends. We're having fun until I start to show my discomfort with what I have to do because my job relies on it. And suddenly I realize how much of a friend my boss actually is.
Right, right.
By the way, if you want to know how much of a friend your boss is, tell them you want to form a labor union. that's where you find out what your relationship actually is. But Triangle of Sadness.
Is it, I'm sorry to cut you off, but would it be worthwhile, since this is a Patreon only episode, this is our fun size episode, to let people know that we are having a screening?
Yes.
On December the 8th?
Yes.
Of this month, this year, 2022, year of our Lord.
Yes. A screening at the Beacon Cinema in Columbia City, Seattle. And of Ricky O, The Story of Ricky,
yes.
Which is quite, we've talked about it on the show a couple times
passing,
but yeah. It is quite possibly the most fucked up martial arts movie of all time. It's like a kung fu video game-esque prison movie. It's kind of amazing, but we're all doing this to benefit the Starbucks United Workers Union for Seattle, the Pacific Northwest,
right.
For their relief fund.
Right.
So when they inevitably have to go on strike because, again, another oligarch, Howard Schultz, is a fucking monster who, if there's anything a rich person hates, is having to treat their employees like human beings. And he is dragging their feet. They are, my God, it's been over a year since some of these things, these labor unions have been forced to be acknowledged by the company. And the company will like, go into the room for like 3 minutes, refuse to answer questions and walk out and say they're conferring in another room. Then the meeting expires so they don't have to negotiate with their workers.
Wow.
They're fucking assholes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the sort of stuff that when it inevitably becomes necessary for the union to go on strike, when it inevitably becomes necessary, when they try to fire union leaders, which they have, and the NLRB has told them that it's illegal, this is the stuff that helps people stay on their feet. Because
right.
They rely on our poverty and our desperation to make us eat shit on a regular basis. And they know that they can wait us out, except when we work together, except when we work in solidarity and unity with each other to protect each other, because ultimately there's way more fucking of us than there is of them. And so that's what That's what Starbucks has done. And I don't even think these people, they're so used to like living in the sort of Clintonite 90s where they can just stomp people and people say thank you, that there hasn't been a union movement like this in forever. It's probably the most exciting thing happening.
It is, and it is especially a strange. It's great to support it. It's great because it reflects on us as a Seattle-based show, and obviously Seattle, Washington, one of the Starbucks is probably the one of the biggest global brands to come out of, you know, to come out of Washington. And I just also want to like say that the guys at Beacon Theater, the people who run the Beacon Theater, have been so awesome about this. Like they immediately wanted to do it when we pitched it to them. They were like, yeah, I'll do it. And so we're working together with them. I guess the only thing is you can go to, we have it on our website, right? Yes. We have a link on RadioVersusTheMartians.com, or you can go to thebeacon.film. That's their website. And it's at the bottom of the calendar now. They haven't started, they have not yet started advertising it. So if you want seats, it's very limited. And if you guys are, anyone on the, is listening in the sound of my voice, is close enough to Seattle area, we would love to have you come out and celebrate.
Absolutely. And it's oftentimes, and this is, I'm saying this as a lefty, this is something us lefties have to learn, which is we'll do fundraisers with educational material where I think sometimes that's the wrong idea. I think make it as fun as possible. And I mean, really,
it's not like we're going to screen like The Corporation or something.
Yeah.
Right?
And those movies are great. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Fine. But oftentimes it's a lot more fun to watch something like this is more of an anti-prison privatization movie.
Right.
And it solves that problem by punching oligarchs. Yeah. And a guy grows into a monster at one point. It's crazy. This movie is fucking bonkers. But it is December 8th, Thursday, December 8th. At the Beacon, go to our website. It's all around there. And
7:30 p.m.
7:30 p.m. Yeah. I think it's 12:50 admissions.
Yeah.
100% of admissions is going towards the Union Relief Fund. Nice. 100%.
Right. And I'm glad we got that out of there because I know some people know, and and a lot of people just may not check the website or be on the Discord. So
yeah, this movie is not educational. I promise. This is sugary goodness. And if you, it's kind of the Verhoeven way of can we sneak good politics under all the gore splatter? It's wonderful. It's a mwah, as our good friend Joe Preddy says, spaghetti kisses.
Spaghetti kisses, of course.
And it's pretty glorious. And again, seats are extremely limited. This is a small theater. It's an intimate show. And the quicker we sell out, the quicker we can have a conversation about whether we want to try doing a second showing.
For sure. And I would love to hear anyone from the Fun Size audience, from the Patreon audience, is what their suggestion might be for another rollicking, crowd-pleasing fundraiser screening for us to do. Because you and I have had lots of ideas, but we'd be welcome yeah. someone else's great ideas too.
Because crowd pleasing is always, I think, those words you said right there, that is the key to it, is let's have a lot of fun. And if there's kind of, you know, even something like Starship Troopers is a really great example of something a bit more political. You want to make a point, it's like, hey, let's watch some cartoon Nazi propaganda where we fight a war of aggression against space bugs. It's pretty wonderful. But I mean, that's exactly the sort of stuff that I'm interested in doing. And I know the people at the Beacon are totally game.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they're wonderful. And and we get to build a relationship with the folks at the Beacon, with the folks at the Starbucks Union. And it's exciting. It's really exciting.
And if you are listening to this show and it means you pay us money, if you want to yell at us, that's your opportunity to come and yell at us. Anyways.
And also if you want to give to this, but you just don't live in Washington State, you don't live around Seattle. There's another link for the same fund, the same relief fund. You can give directly to them at RadioVersusTheMartians.com. It's right at the top of the page right now, or be one down from this episode.
Sure.
Please go check it out, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun night. I think the only thing that I want to say, be prepared for the fact that you are going to step into a Marxist education center.
Yes.
So that's probably also one of the big reasons why we're like, oh, these the people at the Beacon, they're speaking our language.
Yeah, we love these folks. I love it.
We'll be checking your Communist Party USA cards when you come in, right?
I love it because they love movies, they love art films, they love trash films.
Yeah.
something is always playing there that is interesting. It's often from one night only. Like, I saw one of them, I forgot to write it down, but it was a story of this, like, guy in the bayou getting revenge with his pet alligator.
That sounds
amazing. It looked amazing, and I wasn't available the night that it was playing.
Right.
But I got to see it on a poster with the little light bulbs around it.
Well, we did, Mike, you and I did get to see a rare example of when they have a brand new movie out, and we saw Funny Pages, which is... It was one of the funniest things I've seen all year, but it was the same feeling that I had when describing Uzumaki, like mm-hmm. the grossness of some of those images. It was like that on film.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, oh God, this is terrible.
It's a weird kind of absurdity that also feels so lived in and real.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think we both have lived in the sort of nerdy circles that it just feels so authentic, that movie. It is bonkers.
So the two sentence thing is, it's about a teenager who is going to art school. He wants to be a comic book artist in New Jersey, but his parents really don't approve, and so he wants to strike out on his own, move to the big city of Newark, New Jersey. And he runs into a colorful cast of characters. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's Oh, it's
wonderful. It's a coming of age story of sorts.
It's the most fucked up coming of age story. It's almost like a Frank Reynolds coming of age story. It's so weird. But I would absolutely check it out. I think that's something I've got too, is I've been really happy with the movies that have come out this year.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is, in past years, I would complain a lot about the fact that all these big blockbusters shut out everything out of cinemas. So I guess my main complaint, and I guess it's a Scorsese complaint, but that it becomes a greater challenge to see smaller movies, but they are great. And if you know where to find them, but sometimes they only play for like a week or two.
Yeah, yeah,
and like I saw the new Fletch movie, which I really enjoyed.
Yes.
That movie's great, but it was only playing on a weekday at 1:30 PM.
No, and that was one of those where it was released the same day on a digital platform too. So
like trying to sabotage it.
Right. I mean, this is the thing that's happening is most of the stuff, I mean, if anyone listening is interested in watching Funny Pages, I doubt you're going to be able to find a screening of it until it hits Amazon or whatever. It hits all the digital spaces. And that's actually okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's great to see some movies in a theater and with an audience, but yes, maybe they can have half as many MCU screenings and have more movies. Maybe that could work. I don't see it happening.
That's the hard part is that you have something come out. A movie came out recently like Tar.
Yeah.
And I didn't come to any theater near me for like a month. So I had to wait for a while. Then maybe there's like four or five screenings a day. That's more than I get with a lot of movies.
Sure.
But again, if I want to see the new Black Panther movie or Black Adam or something, that movie will meet me where I'm at.
Yeah, because every single movie theater, basically.
Every single movie theater, but also that if I only have time to see it after 9 p.m., there's like five showings. I can tailor it to when I'm available. But if there's only four showings and the last one is at 9, and the one before that is like 4:30, then before that it's like 1, it gets frustrating. So, I mean, that was the Scorsese complaint. And I just get so sick of the way that people have decided to bother him about a thing. Why do you ask a guy a question when you know what he wants to say so that you can get mad at him about it again?
Right.
He doesn't have to like the things you like, dude. It's okay. And the thing is, he didn't say that they were necessarily bad, but he did say that it's frustrating, again, that they eat up a lot of the oxygen and make it harder for the movies that he wants to see get a wide theatrical release.
It is that it's on the internet. It's just impossible to have that kind of nuance where it could be like, hey, you could be someone who actually loves superhero movies and also loves other types of movies. It can be both.
There's no reason. There's no reason. And I'm saying this as somebody for whom The Batman was one of my top 10 movies of last year.
Sure.
So I'm not like totally, you know me, I'm a fucking nerd. I'm not hostile to superhero movies. I'm hostile to Monopoly.
Yeah.
And it feels like we've kind of moved in that direction.
Fucking Uncle Pennybags.
Uncle Pennybags.
Throw that guy in jail. Wait, he is in jail.
Only for a short while. Yeah. Only for one turn, like a rich guy. Wouldn't go to jail at all.
Just, it's in the world of Monopoly, there must actually just be like debtor's prison. because mm-hmm. you do go to prison for having too much debt. So the problem is that since it's in the middle of the Great Depression, the debtors' prisons are all full. That's why you get out after three turns.
If you
wanna, like, they don't have space. You can throw this guy back out on the street.
But this was one of the things, too. If you want to talk about sort of like, you know, capitalist monopoly, the game Monopoly was originally called the Landlord's Game, and it was intended to be an anti-capitalist game.
Of course.
To talk about how unfair capitalism is and the fact that you can accrue more and more and more. And if you own enough property, it becomes impossible for someone to play against you because no matter where they land, they owe you money. I mean, that was the point of the game. And somewhere along the line, a company bought it up, changed the branding, and now it's aspirational to be Uncle Pennybags. That he's like the mascot of the game, and it's so great. It's great to crush people under your heel as a landlord.
I'm just
look at all those apartment buildings.
I've said it so many times, it is the most unfun board game I've ever played.
Yeah,
because it's only fun for one person, and it's not like a regular game when one person wins and then the rest of the people are disappointed because that's what happens in a game. It's no, the person who wins is winning for like a third of the game,
and
for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You're basically just in a cycle where you're losing slowly for like an hour and a half, and the person who's winning is like, bring it on, keep bringing it on.
Once you win, you can't help but keep winning.
Yeah.
I mean, it is capitalism. That once you're in a position that you just own enough capital, that you can just, you don't even need to roll the dice anymore. You just let other people play and you'll win.
There are so many better board games.
That's capitalism, baby. That's capitalism.
Radio vs. the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Doran, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music is written and performed by James Wetzel. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobiah Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just $1 a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
My best friend, but you are a richest.
A what?
A richest. Someone who's prejudiced against rich people.
There's no such word.
Well, there should be.